Cynthia Hawk with Mindful Creative Muse. You're listening to Cut to the Chase.
Stepping out beyond boundaries takes courage and the ability to dream. We are excited to share our new audio podcast called Cut to the Chase. The structure of this podcast embodies open dialogue with friends, family, and professional colleagues, talking about things that impact our ability to thrive. We hope that you will join our unscripted, unbridled podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Cut to the Chase, episode 97, entitled The Accessible Way. Yes, I know, another great title. People are probably going, okay, Greg, which way are you going to go with this? But I think today, when we talk with our featured guest, we're going to find that the accessible way has a tremendous meaning, particularly as it relates to the mindfulness of who we are as individuals. And so with that, I have a quote that basically goes like this. It says, be courageous today. Do something that makes you uncomfortable. Tell someone how you feel with no expectations of outcome. Stand in your own truth. Your vulnerability separates you from the weak. Make the call, write the letter, or make the plan. You are powerful, you are joyful, and you are determined. And so today, our featured guest, she's a small business owner, she's an artist, she's mindful, she's an art teacher, and she's a mentor. She's earned her Master's of Fine Art degree from Lesley University, a College of Art and Design, in 2010 while running her first art-based business for 7 years. In 2017, she closed her photograph business and launched her online mindful art teaching business, Mindful Creative Muse. She is a certified facilitator in trauma, informed expression art, and yoga, soul collage, and more. She's helped busy, stressful, self-critic people move through imposter syndrome and relax with the simple, mindful, and art activities. Her online mindful art workshop and teaching trainings have reached students globally in 38 countries. She's passionate about spreading a simple mindful art activity to make the world calmer and more compassionate place. She has taught a variety of art and yoga studios, art galleries, community centers, adult education centers, retreats worldwide, including Colorado, Southwest, U.S., and Spain. She believes the simple and compassionate art activities gives permission to express ourselves authentically without judgment. And so I'd like to welcome our featured guest, Cynthia Hawk. Do you have any opening remarks?
Thank you so much for having me, Gregory. And I really just want to say that the quote you shared at the beginning around courageously speaking what your truth is and letting go of what any of the outcomes or any expectations attached to what we're sharing just really touched me and is really tied to a lot of the work that I'm passionate about. So I just wanted to say that that quote resonates with me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I do try to do my homework. So Cynthia, let's kind of jump into some of the questions here. You know, your background has really led you to kind of help transform, you know, literally from a global perspective. I mean, having an outreach across 38 countries to spread the simple mindfulness and art related activities. I mean, it's almost speechless for me to begin to say, well, where do I start? I mean, we're talking 38 countries. And so I guess the first question for me would be, what really drove you to really focus your attention around the thoughtfulness and combining that with art?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that, like many people's paths, I didn't set out intentionally to do that. I think I had my own healing journey. And through my healing journey, I discovered that combination of mindfulness and art as a way of just really my own self-care, of being present with lots of different things I was feeling and processing grief or pain, and doing it in a way that felt really nurturing and supportive for myself. And it was through having that own experience that after years and years, I realized, oh, maybe this is also something that speaks, you know, across borders for many people. And so that's one thing that I have really started to realize, is that these simple mindfulness and art activities can be really accessible to everyone, regardless of age, regardless of gender, of color. And it just comes back down to our basic human needs of being with what we're feeling. And if we're able to do that in a way where there's not judgment, where we can have compassion for ourselves and for others, I just find it to be a much more beautiful way to experience life, even though that might be painful. So it was a meandering path, and I'm always happy to share more, but it was definitely not planned on my part initially.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, certainly, you know, as we get further into the dialogue, we do understand that people go through what I simply call kind of the zig and the zag. And in a lot of cases, it really shakes up the core. It shakes you, you know, right down to your soul when you're always constantly at the fork in the road and having to make either a life-changing or an altering course direction in where you see your life is going, which that's one of the things that I admire about what you're doing and the outreach that you currently have, is because you try and bring forth something that really can be somewhat traumatic in the aspect of how people perceive making some of these difficult decisions. Because when we kind of are, should I say, reactive or impulsive, it doesn't provide the access. It doesn't provide the calming demeanor for us to be able to really think through things clearly in a mindful way to make sure that we are making the right decisions. And even with this current situation that we have going on today, I think it's even harder for people to have that thoughtfulness and that mindfulness be on the forefront when they're trying to figure out, hey, where am I getting my next paycheck? Or am I going to have a job in a couple weeks? You know, the economy's bad. I mean, it's just all of this chaotic stuff going on. And so as we break this down, how do you kind of continue to advocate the compassion, you know, even in such troubled times?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. This past year, especially for myself and for every single person I know and have been in contact with and beyond, I think has been challenging in a lot of different ways. And I do agree that those moments when we have more challenges or when life is harder, that those are the moments where it can be more difficult to offer ourselves and others compassion. And I also feel like it's often the time when we really need it the most. And so to your question around how do I advocate for that, part of my practice as well as teaching over the years has been largely around making things really simple and easy to step into. And so I think what oftentimes my brain does, and maybe people can relate to this listening, is my brain often tells me that I have to do something really big, that I have to show up perfectly, or if I'm going to try to do something, that it has to be really grand in gesture. So if I'm having a difficult time and I'm beating myself up for not having more compassion, then I want to shoot to the other side and do something, you know, just really extreme. And I think what I've found for myself and for a lot of my students is usually the opposite is true, that it's more so about how can I tend to just this one small moment? How can I give myself a little more space, even if that's just three breaths right now? And by giving myself that space, then maybe I can soften into all of the things I'm feeling, offer myself more compassion, offer that to other people. So I use a lot of different smaller tools. So sometimes when I am walking into another room, I'll just remind myself to breathe. I leave my art journal out. So if I'm feeling really stressed, I'll give myself 2 minutes to sit down and draw some scribbles synced up with my breath. So things that seem really small, and they are small actions, but over time they build up and it's like building a muscle. So then when I am feeling off my center, or when I do feel like life is really confusing and overwhelming, I'm able to at least trust that I can always return back to my own breath. I can always return back to my own practices that feel really supportive, and that by tending to myself, then I'm able to show up in the world in a more compassionate way.
You know, I don't know how recent ago this was, but one of the things as my team was, you know, trying to facilitate a way to reach out to you to formalize, you know, an opportunity for us to have a podcast with you, was a post that you did on IG. And that post still resonates with me. And I'm going to kind of read that. It was by Howard Thurman. And it basically says, don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive. And then go out and do that. Because what the world needs is for people who come alive. So what is the significance of that mean to you?
Yes, I love that you asked that. So for the longest time, I'll backtrack just to when I was a little bit younger. When I was about 6 years old, I saw a man on the side of the road who was homeless. It was my first time seeing a homeless man. And I asked my dad and he explained, and I instantly was in tears because I just couldn't fathom or understand how there are people in the world that are suffering in that way and not having a roof over their head or food. And I still feel that way. In my mid-20s, 30s, I went to India for 2 months and I did a humanitarian-based documentary photography project. And I was going into people's homes in the slums and I was talking with them about the notion of home and what it meant to them. And I was documenting. And it was such a heart-driven project that I felt really called to give back in the world in the way that I knew best. And at that time, that was through telling stories, and it was through art making, and it was through sitting down and being really present with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I remember one day a woman had shared in one of the slums that she was diabetic and she didn't have the medicine she needed for her feet. And she'd asked me and the other person that was there, my host, that was my translator, if we had come and brought medicine for them. And part of me, my heart really sank because I felt like I should be doing that work. I should be doing work where I'm bringing medicine to people, or where I'm helping, you know, give them electricity or food or a roof over their head. And those are all really beautiful, deeply needed, valid acts of service in the world. And that's also not it hasn't been my calling. It hasn't been the way that I've shown up and served in the world. The way that I feel really passionate to show up and serve is to offer a mirror back and to say that maybe we can offer ourselves more compassion through having really simple practices and space and being present in this moment. And that maybe that's just as much of a gift as somebody bringing somebody medicine or a roof over their head. It just does it in a different way. And so that quote around, you know, being passionate and doing what you love, the more I find that I show up in the world in alignment with my calling and with what I feel most passionate about, the more I also show up and serve in the world. And I think that that is true, you know, for people in lots of different ways. That's just how it's reflected for myself.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Certainly understand that it was an emotional time for you, particularly as it related to something that is so near and dear to your heart. And certainly we can respect that. And from a relatable note, you know, I have that same motivation and drive based on, you know, my other profession that has carried me all over the world, where you see these things and you realize how good we have it here in the US and the accessibility that we have to certain things and how we take things for granted. And, you know, we feel almost entitled or privileged because of the way of where we live and what we do. But yet when you get out and you see a third world country, or you're inside a slum, or you're inside a jungle, or interacting with the local indigenous people in whatever country there is, you find that just your presence alone brings a sense of comfort. Just the conversation and the dialogue provides them so much joy and therapeutic means of being able to reconnect in a positive way, because we're almost viewed as if we're an idol, you know, when these people see us. And I can certainly relate to the fact of, you know, being in a position where you can't really give back, or you don't have the means, because the perception that I've seen in a lot of third world countries that I've been in and worked is where they think everybody that comes across from America is wealthy. And maybe I wish that was the case in some of the situations that I wish I could give back. But what I realize, even though my heart mourns for their suffering and all the things that have occurred, is that by me being there, and like you said, really standing up and willing to basically put myself out there, be vulnerable, to have those discussions is really kind of the first step in being able to try to connect the dots and being able to figure out how things can come together to be able to help those that are in need. And it brings me tears also. And I know that was very touchy for you to express that to us. And we do appreciate you sharing that notion with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, just listening to you share that piece, it reminds me, I think it was Mother Teresa that she had written about her work that she did in Calcutta. And she talked about the fact that anytime we're showing up and connecting with other people, that it's not about one person saving mm-hmm. the other. It's about how can we show up in our shared humanity and really mm-hmm. see and be with each other. And I think that that also really drives me in sharing these practices of mindfulness and art. When I'm teaching, I often refer to myself as a facilitator, because I'm more so focused on how are we the same in our shared humanity, and how can these practices overall perhaps give us each a bit more peace and compassion. So I like her quote that I can't remember exactly, but around being with each other and our humanity.
Right, right. You know, and there was another quote that my team brought to me that you had posted out on IG, which when I read it, and obviously we looked at your website, Mindful Creative Muse, and all of the artistic things that you're doing. I mean, you have wonderful, wonderful things that you're doing out there, and I just think it's outstanding. My daughter is also a photographer, and she does artwork, and I told her, I said, look, please go look at this and give me your feedback. And she was just like, Dad, this is phenomenal, because of the simple fact that she suffered with, ADHD and other things that, we've since, you know, from a younger childhood, we've been able to kind of get past some of those things. But we had to look at things a little bit differently in the way that, you know, we kind of focused in on her being able to deal with life's challenges. And now, of course, she's a manager. She's, you know, extremely successful and moving down the right course. But, you know, art was such a key, essential tool for her, and for the way that we had to ensure that we always placed everything back on art, for ensuring that the message was delivered to her in a clear and concise way. And it's just been phenomenal. And so one of the things that they brought to my attention, which we had started to talk about before our recording, is that vulnerability is the place of birth. And it also innovates creativity and change. And so for me, as I thought about that, you know, and then listening to your story, So your vulnerability started when? You said earlier on you went through some difficult times in your life. You know, you needed to kind of pull yourself back to a more peaceful place. Walk me through what was transpiring back then that really kind of left this vulnerable state with you, and where you had to make some decisions. Help me understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to share because I think a lot of people can connect with my journey as well.
Sure.
So rewinding back to my 20s, I was a full-time manager at an insurance company, and I was also going to college full-time I was on track to get my PhD in clinical psychology. And mm-hmm. I think like a lot of people, I was just burning both ends. I was just full guns blazing and was just wiping myself out. And I was really miserable in a lot of respects and was not honoring self-care or what my needs were. And I had started having panic attacks. And I remember I talked with my dad, and he said he knew I had always loved art, but he had said to me, why don't you take an art class because I was such an overachiever, I turned that into a minor in arts. But he said, why don't you take an art class just for yourself? Do something for yourself while you're still managing everything else. And I ended up taking several art classes for my minor. I ended up taking some yoga classes at the college. And those two things ended up offering a doorway as a reminder of I need to tend to myself and my own needs as well. That I can have all of these goals, I can have all of these intentions and wanting to exceed in a lot of different ways. But if I'm focusing on just that end point and losing myself in the process, it doesn't, it's not of service to anyone because it's not sustainable. So really I started pursuing a lot of art and yoga at that time, and I ended up switching tracks. I saw a flyer on the outside of my psych professor's doorway, and it was for a 1-year post-baccalaureate program in Italy for the arts. And I instantly, in that moment when I saw it, I knew that I was going to switch tracks, and I did. I ended up pursuing my art degree instead. And I think from that moment, it was a willingness for me to put myself first, to put my own self-care first, the fact that I needed space and time to just be with all of my thoughts and notice what was happening in my body. I think what a lot of people can do, especially when you're really focused on work or on goals, is we can neglect even noticing, like, when am I hungry? When do I need to move my body? Oh, I've been sitting at my desk for 8 hours now, like eyes burning into the computer screen. So I think there's lots of different paths and ways that people can honor their self-care. For me, I found that a really accessible way to move into mindfulness and art and yoga practices, because it allowed me to tend to and notice my body as well as my thoughts and my emotions, and a way to express all of those. So it's one thing for me to feel them, but also to give myself permission to express them in a safe space. And I do that through art making and words. And so that was really the catalyst. And then, over the years, I've seen how much it's helped and supported other people. And I loved hearing you speak about your daughter as well, and finding a way in for her through art practices to manage some of ADHD and these other things that she's holding. And so, yeah, I think it shows up for a lot of people in different ways.
Yeah. Well, certainly, what you've just described in your self-care diagnosis and self-care understanding and appreciation for you is something very relatable to me as being an entrepreneur. Early on in my career, to work, like you said, 8 hours at a desk or 12 hours at a desk, and just kind of be pretty much in a mindset of just the work has to get done and not really thinking about yourself, really led to the demise of me over a 12-year stretch where I didn't even really recognize myself. You know, I didn't even understand who I had become. I didn't really, you know, let myself enjoy any of the fruits of my labor, because it was always go to the next project, you know, get involved with the next project, and, you know, and just continue this overall cycle. And I had gotten to a point to where I was absolutely afraid to go on vacation because of the simple aspects of, you know, going on vacation and then you come back and it's the Monday morning catch up, you know, and you got, you know, 100 emails or 200 emails that you got to deal with. And particularly when you're dealing with clients all over the world, you know, it can be quite overwhelming. And so I can truly relate to what you were saying. And at one point in time, and unfortunately it happened at probably the most unwarranted time in my life, is when it all came to a full head. And when it all came to a full head, it was the slap in the face that really said, not only do you need to focus on self-care, not only do you need to reset, not only do you need to think about those around you and consider those that really truly love you, because it can all be pulled away. And literally at that moment in time, within a one-year period, it was all gone. I mean, I went through the most horrific year of my entire life in that 1 year period, and it put me into a state of depression. It put me into a state of, you know, suicidal thoughts. Not that I was going there, but it really drove me to a level that I said to myself, I said, I cannot allow for this to continue. I mean, I've got to basically really take that soul search. You know, I've got to find the way, not only through my mental health, but also through how I interacted with what I was casting out in the world, to be able to bring forth the best of me. And it took a while to do that, because obviously, you know, over a 10, 12 year period, if this is the way you've been perceived and this is the way you've been going about your daily life and conducting business and doing all these things just for, you know, materialistic things or whatever you want to call it, and not really staying focused on the center, the core of the individual who is you, you know, it took many, many years for me to rebuild and to get myself back to where I needed to be. And a part of that started with what we're talking about is the accessible way, allowing for myself to kind of grant some permissions to allow for things that I needed to come in, where in the past life, I would have never allowed for those things to come in because I would have shut them off and slammed the door well in advance, you know? And so I just thought I'd just share that with you. Sorry about getting on my soapbox there, but but it's just, I mean, you know, it was almost like a trigger, you know, because, you know, the one thing with this podcast is the uniqueness and the authenticity of it is that, you know, we have so many commonalities as human beings and as mankind. And sometimes it's really, really hard for me to digest and swallow. Why is there still so much hatred and misconstrued information and all these other crazy things that are going on? But yet when you sit down and you have just a reasonable, a simple kind of, you know, open up the door, you know, and strip down all the boundaries type of conversation, these are the type of authentic conversations that come about. They're so relatable. They're so moving. They're so touching and transformable that people just don't understand that's who we are at the core. It's a part of that accessible way that sometimes we refuse to allow for people to come in. And frankly, for me, sometimes that really sucks.
Yeah, I love that you're pointing out the reminder of when we give ourselves space to really truly connect and hear and see and be with each other, that we can see and feel our own story and the other person's story and just connect to the basic, you know, levels of being a human and the challenges that we come across. And I think sometimes, you know, the storyline looks different, but I think the root of wanting to feel safe and wanting to feel connected and, you know, the the root pieces, I think, are always there. And I loved, I just wanted to say too, I loved that you used the word rebuild when you were sharing your story and talking about that, because I experienced that as well, you know, spending years operating from one way or having certain habits that maybe are detrimental to myself for so long, that it really is a rebuilding and a relearning and giving permission to perhaps tend to myself in a different way. So I just wanted to say, I love that you use that word rebuild. And I think that it also, for me, reminds me of the fact that it's a process, that I think sometimes we know what might feel better for us, or we know what might really tend to what we're needing in the moment. And sometimes we don't do those things because it's more convenient to do the other thing that, you know, we're checked out doing, or there's lots of reasons why we might not do it. But just that, that reminder that it's a process, that it can take time. And I think that we have a choice in each moment how we want to show up for ourselves. And ultimately, that means how we're showing up for others in the world as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Cynthia, this has been, oh my God, it's been a touching conversation for me. I have tingles just talking about this, because, you know, it's so important that people understand that, you know, it's really time for us to open up our hearts and really open up, you know, our eyes towards compassion and empathy and understanding genuinely how we treat people and really put forth, you know, proper action to see that these things come to fruition and that we're not in this vicious cycle or do loop of just continuing to deal with, you know, systemically the same things over and over, year after year after year. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point we have to basically put our foot down and kind of move in a direction that is really going to heal and stop offering lip service, as I would call it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I agree. I think that starts with us first. Absolutely.
Yeah. So are you ready for some rapid fire questions before we wrap up?
Yeah, that sounds great. Go for it.
All right. So question number one, are you living a meaningful life?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Question number two, when is acceptance, if ever, to disobey the law? And what I mean by law is not just the lawfulness of governance law, but the law that you have inside yourself. When do you go against your own integrity? I mean, because should you do that or should you not do that?
I think it's always a betrayal. I really love Brené Brown, and she talks a lot about what's worse, like giving up what my own needs are or living by my own truth, or trying to serve, you know, and be something for somebody else. And so I think that that happens. I think that we as people betray ourselves all the time. And I don't know that it's ever warranted.
Yeah. Yeah. Understood. Understood. What inspires you the most?
I love that question. I'm really inspired, at least when it comes to my mindfulness and artwork, from the stories that I hear back from my students about what has really touched or moved them. I had a mom recently whose 7-year-old son saw her doing some of the doodling practices that I had shared with her, and that he was really struggling with anxiety, and they tried a lot of things and nothing worked. And then he spent the next week going up to his room every night and doing that doodling practice for himself because he was really excited. And so it's those kind of stories, when I hear that back, that it just really hits right in my heart center and helps to remind me of the work that I'm doing and my calling. So that I find really inspiring.
Awesome. Awesome. So what makes you feel empowered?
I think choice okay. to tend back to what is important, permission to be with what's coming up and express in a way that feels, you know, safe and compassionate for me and other people. But yeah, I would say choice and permission. I feel empowered with those things.
Okay. Okay. And my last question is do you believe in true love?
I believe that true love is the only thing that really matters.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for participating in those rapid fire questions. That was pretty much an impromptu that I kind of thought about through our discussion. But certainly, Cynthia, this has been a joy and a delight to have you on our program. Certainly, hopefully in the near term, maybe we can do another episode, because I just feel this synergy, this energy between you and I, that there's a lot more to kind of expand upon the horizon and really kind of cast out, you know, other areas of exploratory subjects and topics that you know our listeners would be very interested in. And so as we're wrapping up, there's really two things that I would like to ask. One is, could you share with our listeners a few lessons learned or value added points that from your experience that you've gone through that has really kind of cultivated and helped you thrive on really being, you know, an advocate for the compassion, the mindfulness, and combining that with art, and how that has kind of blossom you into the person that you've become? Because the reason why I'm asking this question is because there may be someone out there, just as you gave with the analogy of the son and the mom, there may be someone out there that is looking to say, well, whatever I'm doing right now is not working. I need to try something different. And maybe what you're offering is that something different. What would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I really oftentimes live my life by two different quotes that have left a strong impression on me from two different teachers that I've had. And they're both very brief, and they both connect to mindfulness and art. The first quote is more of a question, and it's, can I be with even this? And I oftentimes, like usually several times throughout the day, that question will pop into my head. Can I be with even this? Am I willing to notice the sensations in my body right now? Am I willing to notice that I have an emotional trigger? Am I willing to notice, you know, wanting to express myself in a certain way? And so that brings me back to that mindfulness piece and the permission of really tending to ourselves. And then the other quote that's very simple is to collaborate with chance. And I think of that often when I'm creating with art, because I mentioned earlier how I had a lot of anxiety when I was a manager and doing all of this work. And so much of that was driven from a place of having drive and wanting to exceed and meet certain goals and being good enough. And there's a part with creating with mindful art where it's more about the process and not the actual final art piece. It's not about what you're trying to show to other people. It's about giving yourself permission to express, and also being curious and noticing that you might not know where it's going to lead you. And so I love that as a metaphor or an example with our art making, because with life, I may not know where life is leading me either. And can I collaborate with chance and trust in the fact that I can rely on my own breath and rely on myself to get me through whatever situations are coming up. And so, yeah, collaborate with chance is the other one.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing those takeaways to our listeners. And so if someone was looking to reach out to, you know, perhaps seek out your coaching or your art teachings, you know, or maybe some of your artistry work, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, I think they're the two easiest ways. I have a YouTube channel called Mindful Creative Muse, where I share a lot of videos that shows examples of some of the mindful art practices that you can do at home. Or sometimes you can even just watch the videos to de-stress. You don't have to do the practices themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's one place just to get a feeling for some of the work. And then on my website at mindfulcreativemuse.com, I have more information about my online classes and trainings. And there's a way you can reach out to me also if you wanted to connect or chat.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, certainly we thank you for sharing that. And as we wrap up, I have one final quote that I'd like to share. And it basically says, the most effective and most accessible way to acquire the maximum power of self is to love truly and wisely. And so, Cynthia, we'd like to say thank you for being on the show, being on the program. We greatly appreciate it. To our listeners, please, as I've always stated at the end of every episode, let's be mindful, let's be thoughtful, let's provide compassion and empathy for not only yourself, but for those around you. And let's just try and make the world a better place through unity and togetherness. This has been episode 97, entitled The Accessible Way. Thank you very much, everyone. Gregory Proctor, your host, Cut to the Chase. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Cut to the Chase. Stay connected with us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn at Cut to the Chase. You'll also find even more great content on our website at www.k2tcpodcast.com. Thank you, and catch you on the next episode.